Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, the network for social justice. Hoping all of you had a safe and healthy and happy Thanksgiving. Today we open our show with some good news. An Israeli-Lebanon ceasefire has been negotiated by President Biden and President Macron of France, and we'll have the details on our show today. Then, from Public News Service on 2024 Talks, we'll have some more national and international headlines, including the latest on the Russia-Ukraine conflict, heightened threats against the LGBTQ community in the wake of Donald Trump's election, efforts to reduce methane in agriculture, and a pending EPA decision on whether to give monarch butterflies endangered species status. A La Mesa woman with dementia, Vivian Crowder, remains missing after more than a month, and La Mesa police has released new information hoping to help find her. And we'll tell you where a judge has decided to place a sexually violent predator in East County, despite strong opposition. The city of La Mesa has approved updates to its climate change plan, making it the most comprehensive in the region, according to one council member. The city of El Cajon has lifted its ban on walking dogs downtown. And county health officials are warning consumers not to consume numerous brands of organic carrots that have been recalled due to E. coli that has sickened many people, including one right here in San Diego County. On Destination East County, we'll have all the most fun and festive holiday happenings coming up across San Diego's inland region. We'll have some safety tips for you on purchasing a Christmas tree. And then we'll have some Best of East County reruns today while our staff enjoys some time off over the holiday weekend, including a Sounds of History episode on Christmas with Dr. McGregor long ago in Lemon Grove. And finally, our bookshelf interview with author Bill Swank, an expert on both Santa Claus and baseball. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. In a historic accord, on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, U.S. President Joe Biden and President Emmanuel Macron of France issued a joint statement announcing that after weeks of tireless diplomacy, Israel and Lebanon have agreed to a ceasefire that went into effect the day before Thanksgiving. Biden assured, the United States and France will work with Israel and Lebanon to ensure this arrangement is fully implemented and enforced. Although the U.S. has supported Israel, including sending warplanes used to bomb Hezbollah targets, U.S. troops will not be sent to the region, says Biden. The agreement includes assurances that Israel will be secure from threats by Hezbollah, which has been bombing Israel from southern Lebanon, and other terrorist groups. Hezbollah must move its forces north of the Litani River, about 20 miles from the blue line marking the Israel-Lebanon border. Over the next 6 weeks, stabilization of southern Lebanon is to be provided by the Lebanese army, and state security forces will deploy 10,000 troops under international supervision. The agreement also includes withdrawal of Israeli forces, ultimately allowing residents of both Israel and southern Lebanon to return safely to their homes. But President Biden made clear in a press conference this is designed to be a permanent cessation of hostilities. President Biden, in a news conference, noted that over 70,000 Israelis and over 300,000 Lebanese people have been forced to live as refugees in their own countries due to Hezbollah, an ally of Hamas, bombing Israeli communities and Israel retaliating with military strikes in Lebanon targeting Hezbollah. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said he supported the agreement, along with Israel's security cabinet, to focus on the threat from Iran, which has backed Hezbollah, and to work toward bringing hostages taken by Hamas home now that Israeli actions have killed Hezbollah's leader, Syed Hassan Nasrallah, and decimated Hamas's ranks. Netanyahu has made clear that Israel reserves the right to respond militarily if the agreement is violated, such as if Hezbollah resumes bombing, building tunnels, or bringing in more weapons, San Diego Jewish World reports. But the peace is a fragile one. In the first 24 hours after it was agreed upon, each side has accused the other of violating the ceasefire. Israel claims Hezbollah was moving its people into the no-go zone and responded with warning shots from drones, followed by bombing of a missile storage site. Hezbollah has claimed these were Lebanese civilians returning, although civilians have been warned to stay out of the area until it's been made safe. Mike Huckabee, Donald Trump's U.S. ambassador to Israel designee, told Fox News the peace agreement is certainly good news for both Israelis and Lebanese if it holds. But, he added, the problem is that Hezbollah and its Iranian-backed proxies like Hamas and the Houthis, they've never kept an agreement. Al Jazeera, an Arab news service, reports that tens of thousands of displaced Lebanese have begun returning home to southern Lebanon and celebrating in the streets, despite warnings from the Israeli military to wait until it is secured and Israeli forces have withdrawn. Congressman Daryl Issa, a Republican from San Diego whose district includes much of East County and is of Lebanese descent, refused to acknowledge President Biden's contributions despite intense negotiations by the Biden administration. Issa tweeted, "At real Donald Trump deserves credit for peace in the Middle East. Biden deserves none." However, the international media hails Biden, along with Macron, for achieving the daunting task of a ceasefire in Lebanon and aspiring for a broader peace. Reuters, the French news service, calls the ceasefire agreement a rare diplomatic feat in a region racked by conflict. Similarly, the British Broadcasting Corporation, or BBC, makes clear the U.S., Israel's key backer, had led the charge with France in negotiating the deal in Lebanon. According to Reuters, Hezbollah strikes in Israel have killed 45 civilians and 73 Israeli soldiers, while Israeli strikes in Lebanon have killed 3,961 people and injured over 16,000 more. According to Israel, however, all but a handful of those killed were Hezbollah militants, not civilians. As for the Gaza conflict, President Biden made clear that while he blames Hamas for initiating the war by slaughtering over 1,300 Israeli civilians on October 7, 2023, the people of Gaza have, quote, been through hell, and they deserve an end to the fighting and displacement, the president says. Over 40,000 Gazans have been killed as a result of Israel's relentless military campaign to destroy Hamas in Gaza. Biden faults Hamas for refusing to negotiate a good faith ceasefire and a hostage deal. He says Hamas now has a choice to make, and that the only way out for Hamas is to release the hostages, including American citizens, in order to bring an end to the fighting, which will make possible a surge of humanitarian relief. Next up, Biden revealed that in the coming days, the U.S. will be pushing along with allies in Turkey, Egypt, and Qatar to attain a ceasefire in Gaza. Any such agreement would have to include plans for a future Palestinian state, as well as assurances that Gaza cannot threaten Israel or harbor terrorist groups backed by Iran. President-elect Donald Trump takes office on January 20th and has pledged to be a staunch supporter of Israel and a hardliner against terrorism, though domestically he has drawn criticism for praising anti-Semitic leaders, such as saying of swastika-bearing marchers in Charleston, "There are good people on both sides." The U.S. is also preparing in the waning days of the Biden administration to conclude historic deals with Saudi Arabia, including, Biden hopes, a security pact and economic assurances, along with what Biden describes as a credible pathway for establishing a Palestinian state and the full normalization of relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel. President Biden pledged, "In my remaining time in office, I will work tirelessly to advance this vision for an integrated, secure, and prosperous region, all of which strengthens America's national security." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The Public News Service Friday afternoon update. I'm Mike Clifford. Hours after President-elect Donald Trump selected a new special envoy to tackle a top campaign promise of ending the war between Russia and Ukraine, Russia fired a new barrage of missiles at Ukraine's power grid, plunging parts of the country back into darkness. That from the Washington Post. They report the Moscow missile attack Thursday morning, which consisted of 199 missiles and drones, according to Ukraine's military, targeted the energy infrastructure in western Ukraine, causing power outages for at least 1 million people. The Post notes that President Putin said the bombardment was in retaliation for Ukrainian strikes on Russian territory with U.S.-delivered missiles. And a family-run business in Indiana strikes a chord worldwide with American-made craftsmanship.
The T.A. Weber Company launched 27 years ago, crafting custom speakers used by renowned musicians like John Fogerty, Joe Walsh, and Dropkick Murphys. The company's success amplifies the growing consumer movement favoring U.S.-made goods. Weber says the handcrafted approach delivers unmatched quality and tonal precision, setting it apart from mass-produced competitors.
It's super custom. A lot of the tonal quality is coming from the fact that we are building them one at a time, and we can have a much tighter gap for the magnetic field, which causes the tonal range to increase.
The Alliance for American Manufacturing reports 77% of shoppers prefer American-made products, especially during the holidays. I'm Joe Ullery, Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Meantime, members of the LGBTQ plus community in South Dakota are concerned about what a second Trump presidency could mean for their safety, rights, and protections.
The Trevor Project's Zach Eisenstein says following Election Day, his organization saw a 700% increase in calls, texts, and chats compared to weeks prior. That's the biggest daily surge since they started offering 24/7 services in 2019. Eisenstein says, despite the real fear, he knows this community will be resilient.
We have to acknowledge this is a difficult time and there are many challenges that lie ahead, but this is not new for the LGBTQ plus community. Throughout our history, our community has had to fight for our rights, and we will continue to do so just as we always have.
I'm Kathleen Shannon.
Connecticut and the nation are working on lowering methane emissions, which means taking a closer look at agriculture.
Connecticut has cut methane emissions from agriculture and landfill decomposition, but these still account for up to 25% of the state's greenhouse gas emissions. Nationally, livestock production is a top source of these emissions. While solutions to mitigate methane exist, Fernanda Ferreira with the Clean Air Task Force says the lack of wider benefits make it harder for farmers to adopt these practices. Very few solutions that we have available. It's not like they are going to adopt that solution. It's going to reduce emissions. Plus, it's going to improve animal welfare. Plus, it's going to reduce their costs or improve milk production or wool production or meat production. How farmers store manure can impact how much methane it generates. Storing it in lagoons creates the ideal conditions for creating emissions. Other storage methods, like using it as fertilizer, are beneficial but create other environmental hazards like runoff. The environmental. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
This story was produced with original reporting by Seth Milstein for Sentinel. And new changes in federal law will permit West Virginia and other states to use Medicaid dollars to pay for health care services for incarcerated youth beginning January 1.
In addition to helping kids get physical and dental health care, the new rules should give them needed resources to address mental and behavioral health challenges stemming from childhood trauma, explains Professor Elizabeth Crouch at the University of South Carolina. She says mitigating adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, is a growing part of efforts to keep rural kids out of the juvenile justice system and detention.
A fifth of rural children are diagnosed with developmental behavioral mental health disorders. And rural children are more likely to be diagnosed with developmental behavioral disorders such as ADHD than their urban counterpart.
About 45% of West Virginia children experience ACEs, a rate 5 points higher than the national average. Nadia Romlagan reporting.
Finally, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service expected to decide whether or not to protect the monarch butterfly under the Endangered Species Act within the next 2 weeks.
The service could choose to list the iconic orange and black butterfly as endangered or threatened, or take no action at this time. Rebecca Quinones-Pinon with the National Wildlife Federation says the Western Monarch has declined by more than 90% from historical levels.
We have to act. This is the moment when we must, if not reverse, at least stop that serious decline of many insect pollinators.
The annual Western Monarch butterfly count is currently underway, with three major campaigns running through January. Last year, experts estimated the population at about 233,000, compared with 4.5 million that used to migrate up the California coast each winter in the 1980s. I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations, your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Vivian Crowder, 71, has dementia, and she's been missing for 4 weeks. La Mesa police have released a photo of her, which shows she was last seen October 29th at 12:14 p.m. walking along the shoulder of State Route 125 North near the Interstate 8 overpass. She was wearing a blue denim jacket, head wrap, floral shirt, black stretch pants, and turquoise shoes. California Highway Patrol received a report of a pedestrian on the freeway and checked the area at the time, but didn't find her. Lieutenant Katie Lynch with La Mesa Police says, "We are hoping that a good Samaritan picked her up and drove her somewhere, and if so, we hope they will contact us and let us know where they took her." The missing woman is familiar with the trolley and bus system, but not familiar with the East County area. She suffers from dementia, and from those we've spoken with, says Lieutenant Lynch, Vivian appeared very confused on the day she went missing. She's friendly and would talk to anyone. If you have any information, please call the La Mesa Police tip line at 619-667-7537, or you can call 911 if you believe you see Vivian Crowder. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. The La Mesa City Council has adopted a 2024 Climate Action Plan update, a roadmap for reducing community-wide greenhouse gas emissions in La Mesa. The update includes 6 comprehensive strategies, an expansion from the 5 outlined in the original Climate Action Plan passed in 2018. These strategies to improve sustainability in La Mesa include building energy efficiency, clean and renewable energy, clean and efficient transportation, water efficiency, waste reduction, and urban natural environment. Each is supported by 21 measures, 30 main actions, and 123 implementation and supporting actions, including programs, projects, policies, education outreach, and more. The update also keeps equitable outcomes in mind, with tools to identify disproportionate impacts on overburdened communities to guide decision makers. Besides reducing greenhouse gas emissions, the plan also aims to improve air quality, public health, job growth, economic stability, community resilience, quality of life, and lower the cost of living, as well as help prepare for extreme heat, flooding, wildfires, and drought. Councilmember Jack Hsu moved to approve the measure, which was passed 4-1. Councilmember Laura Lothian voted against it, arguing that climate change was not listed as a priority of La Mesa residents in a recent city survey. But Councilmember Hsu says, "We now have the best climate change plan in the region, and we should congratulate our staff. Climate science is changing, and they're finding new methods to deal with it," he says, adding that the need to address climate change has increased, but so have the challenges. With many older homes, the cost to convert to renewable energy can be substantial. "It's not fair to ask people with low incomes to make these changes without help," says Hsu, who is retiring in December, but hopes to see that issue addressed in the future. 2 newly elected council members, Lauren Cazares and Genevieve Suzuki, both Democrats, will take office at the council's first meeting in December, and both are strong supporters of addressing climate change.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. Merle Wakefield, a sexually violent predator, has been conditionally released from Coalinga State Hospital as a transient. He's been temporarily placed at a home on Desert Rose Ranch in Hakumba Hot Springs. He will have 24-hour supervision by Liberty Healthcare, a private company contracted by the state, with several conditions for his release, including that Liberty will provide a security employee to accompany Wakefield 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. A judge ordered Wakefield released temporarily after several other attempts to place him permanently in East County communities failed following outpourings of community opposition. Wakefield was convicted of rape and lewd acts with a child years ago and was designated as a sexually violent predator. His release as a transient was opposed by Supervisor Joel Anderson and others. However, Wakefield has served his sentence in state prison as well as years in a state hospital and thus is legally entitled to be released.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
It's official. El Cajon is going to the dogs. Members of the El Cajon City Council voiced surprise to learn that a 1997 ordinance prohibited dogs in the downtown Superblock area where popular events are held. So on November 19th, council members voted unanimously to repeal the ban and legalize dog walking downtown. Assistant City Manager Vince DiMaggio explained that the ban was originally approved due to a perception that dogs might pose health hazards and increase maintenance needs. However, none of those concerns have materialized, he said, adding that bringing dogs to public places has since become commonplace, including companion animals as well as service dogs. He noted, "We see dozens of dog walkers daily in Centennial Plaza," adding that technically that's illegal, as is walking dogs in Prescott Promenade and other downtown areas where the public frequently brings dogs on leashes when they dine at outdoor cafes, enjoy outdoor concerts and car shows, or simply exercise their pets along public streets. Two public speakers both supported repealing the outdated law. Karen Anderson noted that the 2021 census found 39% of U.S. households own at least one dog, and Pew Research found that 93% consider pets to be family members. Anderson told the council that she chooses which restaurants and other places to frequent based on which ones allow dogs. Bobby, who did not give his last name, noted that El Cajon's police and fire departments now have their own dogs. He said residents need to be able to walk their dogs legally. Repeal the prohibition on dogs in the downtown Superblock area, he urged the council. Councilmember Phil Ortiz gave a thumbs up to ending the prohibition. He said that when Bobby approached him to ask if he knew that dog walking was illegal downtown, his reaction was, "No way." He said allowing dogs would be a great move to enhance the downtown area since they're like family members. He noted that El Cajon is a dog-friendly community that recently sponsored an event at a park to try and break a world record for the most dogs watching the dog-themed movie Beethoven. Councilman Steve Goble stated, "Most people don't even know this is illegal," and he added, "If we're going to encourage housing that is pet-friendly, then we need to have a place to walk dogs and repeal this ordinance." Goble asked staff if dogs could be prohibited on a case-by-case basis, such as Haunt Fest, where some dogs get stressed out by large crowds and scary sights and sounds. Staff assured him that this could be done. Councilmember Kerry Kendrick, who owns two dogs of his own, said San Diego neighborhoods such as Kensington are welcoming to dog owners. "I think it would be great to have dogs out there," he said, of El Cajon's downtown. And Councilmember Michelle Mitchell said, "I have a house full of animals. I didn't know that it was prohibited. I brought my big dog downtown many times and ate here at the restaurants." The council voted unanimously to repeal the ban on leashed dogs downtown. A second reading of the ordinance will take place in December. Reporting for East County Magazine in El Cajon, this is Miriam Raftery. Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County. There's a dazzling array of holiday events coming up, including synchronized light shows at Camp Christmas in Pine Valley, North Pole Limited train rides at the Campo Depot, Lakeside's Spirit of Christmas, La Mesa's Holiday in the Village, a holiday bonfire in Santee, holiday lights on Main in El Cajon, a snow day at Lindo Lakes in Lakeside, a Christmas market in Crest, caroling on Broadway in Lemon Grove, Christmas on Mount Helix, and the German-American Society's Christmas in El Cajon. Camp Christmas in Pine Valley is back with dazzling lighting displays and more starting at 5:30 p.m., November 29th through 30th, December 1st, December 6th through 8th, and again December 13th through 22nd. Visitors will see thousands of computerized lights strung on trees and a spectacular water show, both synchronized to holiday music. There's also hay rides, a bounce house, laser tag, archery food, live entertainment, and a talking Christmas tree, a nativity presentation, Camp Christmas train rides, a children's playground, climbing wall, face painting, gift shop, and more. Food options include a buffet, barbecue dinners, snack bar, sweet treats, and more. For reservations and details, visit pinevalleycampchristmas.com and be sure to bundle up because the winter weather in this mountain community can be chilly. The famous North Pole Limited returns to celebrate the holiday seasons Fridays and Saturdays from November 29th through December 21st at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum's Campo Depot. Trains depart Fridays and Saturdays at 5 and 7 p.m. Arrive at least 30 minutes early to get your tickets, explore a holiday gift shop, and soak up the festive atmosphere. Once aboard the North Pole Limited, Once aboard the North Pole Limited, a Jolly Elf crew will entertain you with holiday sing-alongs, festive stories, and delicious hot chocolate and cookies. As the train winds through the backcountry scenery, keep your eyes peeled for the North Pole, where the train will pick up Santa and his lovely Mrs. Claus. Santa and Mrs. Claus will visit with every passenger on the train as the 90-minute ride returns to the Campo Depot. For tickets, which sell out early, visit psrm.org. That's the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website. Julian holds its annual Country Christmas Tree Lighting Celebration November 30th from noon to 8 p.m. at the Julian Town Square. This event features craft booths, vendors, live music all day, a Christmas market, tree lighting, and Santa Claus meet and greet starting at 6. For details, you can visit the Julian Country Christmas page on Facebook. Kick off the holiday season at El Cajon's Holiday Lights on Main, hosted by the downtown businesses on Saturday, November 30th from 3 to 9 p.m., featuring festive fun for the whole family with amusement rides, an ice skating rink, a cookie decorating station, live music, and photos with Santa. For details, visit downtownelcajon.com. Lemon Grove invites you to the city's annual community bonfire on Friday, December 6th from 4:30 to 8:30 at Traganza Heritage Park in Lemon Grove. Enjoy visits with Santa, music with a live band, a game truck, crafts, inflatables, free cookies, hot chocolate, and popcorn, more foods for purchase, welcoming remarks from the mayor, and an ugly sweater contest. Even sunny San Diego can get snow with little help from modern technology. You're invited to Snow Day at Lindo Lake on December 6th from 2 to 5 p.m. as the county turns the popular park into a family-friendly winter wonderland with fresh snow for sledding and snow play. You can also enjoy games, giveaways, and photos with Santa. This event will take place at the ball field at Lindo Lakes in Lakeside. For more information, you can visit sdparks.org. The Mount Helix Park on December 7th from 3 to 8 p.m. will transform into a winter wonderland. This festive night features a Christmas market with crafts, local vendors, food and beverages, kids' crafts, a caroling sing-along, and more. Shuttles are available to the public at Grossmont High School's lower parking lot. Santa will be there from 3 to 6 p.m., followed by the sing-along from 6 to 8, with the Christmas Rock and Roll Band and Kindred Spirits. Lakeside's 26th Annual Spirit of Christmas on Main Avenue will be held December 7th from 3 to 7:30 p.m., with Santa arriving at 4:30 and a tree lighting ceremony at 5 at the Old Presbyterian Church, now the Lakeside Historical Society headquarters. Santa and the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce invite you to enjoy an old-fashioned hometown celebration, including shopping, children's activities, treats, local performances, a classic car show, and even a mailbox for the North Pole. There's parking at the El Capitan Stadium Association's Lakeside Arena. For more information, you can visit the lakesidechamberofcommerce.org. The reindeer are taking a day off on Sunday, December 8th, when Santa will arrive at the Crest Christmas Craft Fair aboard a fire truck. Santa arrives at 4 and will visit with children until 6 p.m. The craft fair starts at 10 a.m. and runs through 6, with unique crafts, vendors, raffle baskets, musical entertainment, food, and photo opportunities. This event will be held at the Crest Clubhouse on North Park Drive in the Crest community of El Cajon. The German-American Societies of San Diego invite you to a traditional Christmas market. This festive event features shopping for handmade gifts, delicious German dishes, holiday beer, and Glühwein, choral performances, kids' activities, and photos with Santa. This festive event will be held at the German-American Society's headquarters on South Mollison Avenue in El Cajon on December 7th from 2 to 7 p.m., and again, Sunday, December 8th from 2 to 6 p.m. Get more information at germanclubssandiego.org. The La Mesa Holiday in the Village is an event open to the community featuring live music, cozy fires, craft vendors, food, holiday photo opportunities, including selfies with Santa, and a kids' area bigger than Santa's toy shop. The festivities take place on Saturday, December 14th from 12 noon to 9 p.m. along La Mesa Boulevard. Visitors can walk the streets of La Mesa's historic downtown village while exploring dozens of local craft vendor stands and then cozy up with artisan and craft booths. Friends and family can relax by the fire pits while enjoying holiday caroling, cheerful holiday music, and fun live entertainment from local schools, clubs, and more. Get more information at LaMesaVillageAssociation.org. And finally, caroling on Broadway in Lemon Grove will take place on Friday, December 13th, and again on Saturday, December 21st. 'Tis the season to be jolly, so Revitalized Broadway invites singers, no experience required, to join in spreading this holiday cheer. Meet at the Lemon Grove Promenade at 5:30 p.m. Again, that's December 13th and December 21st for Caroling Down Broadway, which will start at 6 p.m. Song packets will be provided. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. This is Miriam Raftery with a public health alert. San Diego County public health officials are asking people to throw away organic carrots tied to a nationwide E. coli outbreak. One person in San Diego who consumed the carrots became ill from the same strain of Shiga toxin-producing E. coli that is part of a multi-state outbreak. 39 people infected with the outbreak strain have been reported from 18 states. 15 of those have been hospitalized and one has died. The implicated carrots are organic, whole bagged carrots, and baby carrots sold under a whole bunch of different brands by Grimway Farm at major retailers. Those brand labels include Trader Joe's, Sprouts, O Organics, Cal Organic, Bunny Love, Good & Gather, Full Circle, Compliments, Greenwise, Marketside, Nature's Promise, Wegmans, Wholesome Pantry, Raley's, Simple Truth, President's Choice, and Grimway Farms in a variety of sizes. E. coli can cause severe stomach cramps, diarrhea, and vomiting, often within 3 to 4 days. The strain found in the carrots can cause hospitalization and even death. Grimway Farms has issued a nationwide recall, so the carrots are likely no longer in stores for sale, but they may be in your home. Dr. Anita Kadakia, Interim County Public Health Officer, advises if you or a loved one are feeling sick, contact your doctor as soon as possible. The Shiga toxin producing E. coli bacteria can cause serious kidney problems that require hospitalization, so it's important to get care promptly. If you think you purchased the affected carrots, do not eat them. Throw them away or return them for a refund, and wash any containers or surfaces that touch these carrots with hot soapy water or in the dishwasher. Make sure to also wash your hands with soap and water after handling the carrots or containers.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
If you're purchasing an artificial holiday tree, look for the label Fire Resistant. When purchasing a live tree, be sure to check for freshness. When setting up the tree at home, keep it away from fireplaces and radiators. Heated rooms dry live trees out rapidly, so be sure to keep the stand filled with water and use only lights that have been tested for safety by a recognized testing laboratory. Check each set of lights, new and old, for broken or cracked sockets, frayed or bare wires, and throw out any damaged sets. Replace burned out bulbs promptly with the same wattage. Use no more than 3 standard size sets of lights for each single extension cord. Don't use electric lights on a metallic tree. The tree can become charged with electricity from faulty lights, and a person touching a branch could actually be electrocuted. Turn off all lights when you go to bed or leave the house. The lights could short out and start a fire. Never use lighted candles on a tree in homes with small children. Take special care to avoid sharp or breakable decorations. Keep ornaments with small removable parts out of the reach of children or pets. And don't use tree preservatives if you have pets or small children, because drinking the water could be toxic. Happy holidays and stay safe.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is Miriam Raftery, host of the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ. While our staff is off enjoying some holiday time with their families, we thought it would be a good time to replay some of our Best of East County episodes.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history. It's the holiday season in warm, sunny East County. As we count our blessings, we can't help but think of those who also walked beneath that same benevolent sun years ago in somewhat less happy circumstances. One such person was Dr. Eben McGregor, one of very few doctors in East County in the 1930s, and the only game in town in Lemon Grove. Here are his words, written on Christmas Day, 1956, nearly 60 years ago. I awakened this morning thinking of my early days in Lemon Grove, and of the dusty but very pretty little town as I first saw it. O little town of Lemon Grove, thousands of lemon trees, nearly everyone had a horse. Lots of people had asthma, and had come here for the good climate. I thought of S.D. Eckler on Central Avenue, who came here with $30,000 and sunk it into land that was ruined by the Mattoon Act in the 1930s. Eckler started a huge rabbit ranch. Poor man took credit in the 30s so people could have rabbit stew. I recalled Dr. Charles Good, the dentist, with a big citrus ranch and a nice house, also on Central Avenue. He fixed your teeth for a dollar in the 1930s. And good old Ed Fells, of the Fells Naphtha soap fortune. Not that he had any of that money. He taught me lobster fishing, completely illegal, and the ocean was cold in winter. I thought of that awful segregation case the school board started when they built the Mexican school, and then the Mexicans went on strike at the packing house. How the school board thereafter began to eliminate the Mexicans from the payroll. People like Andy Anderson, good people, Art Ahrens, Reverend Kurtz, and Herman Przybylski were part of that mess. Herman Przybylski had come here from Poland. He had a big citrus ranch and horses. He thought I was a communist because I had run for office on the Democratic ticket. I didn't know the meaning of the word communist in those days. But Herman had me investigated, and I will never forget when he came over and told me I was okay. We lived across the street from each other, for Pete's sake. I was his doctor, and no communist either. That reminded me of Herman's boy, Frank, who had terrible asthma and was good friends with the adopted son of Colonel and Mrs. Bryan, who lived in the big show place where Ambassador Hayes, later President Hayes, had visited. The adopted son was always tippling in the parlor and helping himself to the brandy during tea parties. But most of all, I remember Tony Sonka. He, who ran the famous general store next door to my home and medical office on Main Street, I remember saying to Tony, "Do you remember that truck that came through Lemon Grove on Christmas with flour and potatoes and somebody's old clothes and other stuff? It was all for the needy. You loaned us a little house to store the clothes. The Depression had struck so hard. I had several thousand patients who had no money. One month I worked from dawn to dusk 7 days a week, and I took in $86 in cash. Tony, you fed them, and I tried to keep them alive." Dear listeners, those were the words of Dr. Eben McGregor, who went on to lead the Veterans Administration for President Franklin Roosevelt in World War II. Dr. McGregor's house was designed by the great Alberto Traganza, also a Lemon Grove resident. That was in 1932, but it took 4 years to build because the doctor had no money, because his patients had no money. Patients with construction skills worked off their bills in sweat equity on the good doctor's house. It still stands today on Main Street, an important historic site. For the Sounds of History, I'm Helen Ofield.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing author Bill Swank to discuss the release of his new book, Christmas in San Diego. My guest has a diverse resume. He's not only a baseball historian with 9 baseball books under his belt, but since 2002 he's been our much-loved Santa at Balboa Park's festive December nights. Baseball and Santa, often called the Baseball Santa. Welcome, Bill. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you. It's a lot of fun to be here.
Let's start with your new book, Christmas in San Diego. It takes the reader on a tour of the holiday in our region. So first, tell me how a baseball aficionado became so involved in Christmas in San Diego.
Well, the book came about because I've written a couple of books for Arcadia on baseball. And my editor was out here a couple of years ago, and he said, why don't you do a book on Christmas? And at the time, all I had really were pictures of myself. My only knowledge of Christmas was what I already knew. I began researching the history of Christmas in San Diego. I wanted to see how Christmas was celebrated in the various communities of San Diego. What are the traditions of Christmas in San Diego? I found a lot of pictures of trees, Christmas trees. Now, I thought that was fun, so that's a chapter. Mm-hmm. And then the final chapter is on Santa Clauses, because I really didn't know any other Santa Clauses. And the Santa Clauses I was looking for, I wasn't necessarily looking for, well, I purposely was not looking for mall Santas.
Right.
I'm looking for volunteer Santas.
Uh-huh.
And they're out there. They tell wonderful stories, and it's about the spirit that's in these people. And they can be men, they can be women. We're in the East County. There's a group in Santee called the Santee Santas, which I think is a great name. Started back in 1953 with the superintendent of schools and some teachers to make Christmas good for some kids that didn't have any money.
Oh.
Now there are over 200 members.
Really?
And they are, Santee Santas. I love the name. The point I try to make in the book is that they're all Santas and they want to give to others, and the Christmas spirit is about giving and being good to one another.
So you got involved with December Nights, and your editor sort of volunteered you to write this book. And then you started doing all the research. Is that right?
Well, it isn't that he volunteered. He asked me if I would do it. And I thought, yeah, that would be great, because the two have become intertwined in my life. I got the name Baseball Santa because I played for the House of David. It's a religious colony out of Benton Harbor, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And they had beards and long hair, and I'm the only Santa that's ever played for them. And they used to play against the Negro Leagues. And when I went back to the Negro Leagues draft 2008, when I hand out my card, people say, oh, you're Santa. And these former Negro League players, they all said, we thought you were probably with House of David.
Hmm. Well, you look like the most authentic Santa I've ever seen, like the original picture book.
Well, wonderful. I didn't know I was going to look like this. I was a skinny little kid.
Uh-huh.
And when you look like this, you get approached by, you can make good money being Santa Claus. So I was asked to be a Santa by a woman that takes photographs at Sears. What happened is my wife and I were at Hometown Buffet. I'm loading up my plate and I feel something on my leg. And I look down and it's a little tiny Mexican girl. She's got both arms wrapped around my leg. And when I looked down, she looked up, she said, I love you, Santa.
Oh, isn't it sweet?
And I pat her on the head and I said, I love you too, honey. And my heart just melted.
Uh-huh.
And a woman standing there says, does that happen to you very often? I said, well, the older I get, the more it happens. Well, within that year, my wife and I were at a party at a neighbor's house, and two women approached and said, we want you to be our Santa. I said, I don't want to be Santa. But when they said it was for the Christmas Center in Balboa Park at the Orton Pavilion with the little dioramas mm-hmm. that tell the Christmas story,
mm-hmm.
They said they needed a Santa, and I took my kids there when they were little. And I thought, well, this is a way I can give back to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been there Santa since 2002. This will be my 14th year. Mm-hmm. And I love it. It's wonderful. I'm very proud to be San Diego Santa.
And you're writing this book is a wonderful story, too, because it's Santa finding out more about the golden rule, as you say, here in San Diego. Give us another example, if you would, about the goodness that happens at this time in San Diego.
There's a group in National City of mm-hmm. bikers
yeah.
that give out free bicycles to poor kids in National City. They give out 200 a year. I met the man. He goes by the name of Snowball. He's got a beard and he's got a chopper. He's with a motor club,
the
Booze Fighters, as a matter of fact, is the name of their club.
And
he met a guy drinking beer. And when he found out this man, his name was King, that he was fixing up old bikes and painting them for poor kids down National City, he thought, well, I like to work on mechanical things and I like drink beer. So This goes back maybe 30 years, and he got these other bikers involved. So on Christmas, they have a parade down National City, and they've got Santa in a sidecar, and they give out these free bikes. Now, those guys are Santa Claus. Now, you may look at them and say, they're bikers, But they're Santa, and that's what I mean by there's so many unusual Santas in San Diego.
So you don't need to look the part, but all these people under the radar, they're doing these amazingly generous things.
Parents are Santa.
Right.
And we, the goodness that we have in us is Santa Claus, I say. Mm-hmm. I have no training as Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. I remember taking my kids to the mall and, you know, they wore the fake beards and they had the 1,000-yard stare and they didn't interact with the kids. I try to be the Santa I wish my kids could have visited. And I talk to the kids and I smile for all the pictures and I'm friendly with people. And yes, I am a little loud, but they like that. I was Santa for hospice until San Diego Hospice until they went bankrupt.
What was that like?
It was very difficult. The first day that I went out, I was very serious and I was a sober, somber Santa and it wasn't much fun.
No.
And I wasn't doing much in the homes. And the more I loosened up and the louder and the jollier I got, the better it was. They told me, they said, you're going to bring joy in these families. And I thought, how can you? But the first year, a woman told me, this is the best Christmas we ever had, which shocked me.
That's amazing.
And a story I like to tell is about a little boy. Now, this little boy is in hospice, and you know what that means.
Uh-huh.
He came out to greet me. He was mobile. He said, Santa, I love you. Oh. I love you, too. We go inside. He says, when I grow up, I want to be Santa Claus. This is a kid in hospice. He's 7 years old. He wants to be Santa when he grows up. So I said, why wait? I took off my hat. I took off my jacket, and I put it on him. That's the picture that I just showed you.
Uh-huh.
This little boy with wearing my jacket and then my belt's wrapped around a couple times. He's got this big smile. He wants to be Santa when he grows up. And I said, why do you want to be Santa? And he says, I want to do nice things for other people. That kid was a Santa.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yes, he was.
Here's a little boy with cancer, dying of cancer, and he's thinking about being good to other people. And that's what I hope the whole message of my book is, touching on that part of San Diego. Appreciate all the wonderful people that we have in all the communities, all the volunteers that make Christmas a wonderful celebration for everybody else.
Right, because we have so much bad news in the news. It's nice to remember the good things that are there, even if
there's a lot of good in the world. There's a lot of good in the world. People are getting upset about Christmas. Christmas is the celebration of the birth of Jesus. Santa Claus is not, you know, it's a secular figure. I'm not, I'm not pushing any religious agenda. The golden rule, be good to others, that's my agenda.
And that's universal.
It is. It is.
Can you give us a Santa laugh? A ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
How about ho, 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 Merry Christmas?
Ho, 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 Merry Christmas, kids.
I love it. Okay, let's go back to your book and its honoring of diversity. You mentioned some unique decorations. Can you give us an idea, a glimpse at some of the decorations you've seen that are more unusual or more striking?
Well, diversity, you know, it's taken on a different term. You know, now they think of it, you know, it's kind of a racial and a gender term.
Mm-hmm.
And the diversity that I was addressing is San Diego County is very diverse just by its geography, by its size. So the book has Ocotillo Wells celebrating Christmas out in the desert, an unusual decoration. Out in Hacumba, they have a tumbleweed decorating contest. And
last year,
a seventh grade kid, I think he won $100 for a tumbleweed Santa and reindeer out in his front yard. Decorations that people have put up out in Canyon City, I think it is. It's out near Campo. There's nothing in Canyon City. Mm-hmm. And I went past, and there's a manger scene. And it's very simple. I mean, the rocks that were saying Canyon City, they've fallen off. But people are celebrating Christmas in so many ways. I write for the Claremont Times, and there are neighborhoods throughout San Diego County that decorate for Christmas. And they have names, like there's Candy Cane Lane down in Chula Vista, and there's Christmas cards, Penasquitos. Claremont always has this wonderful neighborhood light display, but it doesn't have a name. It's just called Jamar and Lana. Those are the drives. So I thought, this place needs a name. I found out that the man who started this, and this goes back into the 1970s, and he has just begun treatment for cancer. So this is kind of a tough time in his life. His name is Don Park. And so my column that'll be coming out in December, I'm proposing that the Claremont light display be called Claremont Christmas Park.
Perfect.
And so people won't know, they won't understand the park part, but everybody in the neighborhood will. So, but I mean, here's this guy. He told me how as a young father, his little boy, they went walking in the neighborhood, handing out flyers. Let's decorate for Christmas. And now it's one of the great Christmas decorations, a community that decorates. And if you live there, I've talked to the neighbors. They say, you got to get in by 4 o'clock because you ain't getting out.
Oh, I'd love to see it. Well, let's go back to December nights, because I know that that's a very beloved festival here in town. What does the experience, first of all, what's it like being in front of all those people? And then what does the experience bring to your holiday, your personal holiday?
Well, it used to be called Christmas on the Prado.
Okay.
It got changed in 2002 to December Nights mm-hmm. in the Park. They used to get 50, 60,000 people, which is a lot of people.
Yeah.
Now they estimate that they get 300 to 350,000 people. And so it's become very commercial.
Oh.
Now, the display that is in the park, the original purpose was for it to be non-commercial. Now it's gone the other direction.
What do you mean by it's gotten commercial?
They're selling food. They're selling so many things.
Okay.
And I'm Santa Claus. I have no idea what's going on, because when you wear a red suit and you get out of your sleigh, uh-huh. mine being a car, kids see you and they start following you. And then I walk behind the Oregon Pavilion, get to my chair. There's a long line waiting for me, and I see everybody in the line, and then they follow me back to my car. So I really don't know what happens.
Right. So the commercial part doesn't touch
you. Yeah. And there's so many families and kids that come back every year, and it's just so good to see them. And I tell people that when you're Santa, you operate on a stage. It's 2 feet square at the most. Kids are right in your face.
Sure.
And when they're looking at you and you're Santa, and I have a real beard. In 2002, there weren't that many real beards. I remember kids touching my beard. I thought I'd get my beard pulled. I've never had a kid pull my beard.
No one ever tried to yank it off.
The only one that tried it, the only one that pulled my beard, I was on Scott and BR and their TV show. And Scott, he says he's Jewish. He says, I always wanted to pull Santa's beard. He pulled my beard. And I didn't like it.
No.
And I thought it was, he thinks he's a wise guy, but it was inappropriate, but that's his style. I've never had a kid pull my beard.
Wow. Okay, let's go a little bit to your historian hat instead of your Santa hat. So what is the thing that you love to research the most in history? I guess about the city of San Diego, what is the most interesting historical fact that you've ever learned? Whether it be about baseball or Santa, any topic.
My first book was about the Lanefield Padres.
Okay.
And I wanted to learn about baseball before professional baseball came to town. So I spent a long time researching old newspaper articles. I went to the library. I was at the Historical Society. And there were a lot of stories that were told, and most of them were wrong. Because it would be history that gets repeated, and a story gets written, say, in 1910, and it gets rewritten in 1930, and they change it a little bit, and everything keeps changing. So I went back and found the history of baseball in San Diego. And it was with Arcadia that they wanted me to do a book when Petco Park opened. And you can just write so much about baseball, and I wanted to do more. So the first book sold. So they let me do the early history of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was finding all the wonderful stories that happened before 1936 when the Padres came to town. As my wife knows, I just enjoy doing research and going to the library and going through the microfilm. And when you discover something new, which is really very old, it's just a lot of fun. It's very exciting.
And it sounds like no matter what you do, you're looking for those little stories.
Yes.
Untold
stories. It's like you're on a trip. I was at the library once, and the librarian said that she was going to a hockey game that night. And I said, is it hockey season? She said, I know your problem. You're lost in your research. I was back in the 1890s. You know, that happens when you get into research.
One last question. What are you writing next? Is it going to be more baseball, more Santa, more history? Give us a glimpse.
Well, let's ask my wife, what am I writing next? She has a lot of ideas of things I'd like to do. Getting published is not easy. And once you're published, publishers will contact you to want you to write stuff. I mean, like happened with this book. I originally thought I was going to write about my experiences as a probation officer.
And oh, you were a probation officer. This comes up at the end of the interview. Okay.
Yes. And people that worked for me or that I was their probation officer, they said, I can't believe you're Santa Claus because I was never described as a jolly guy. People now that know me they say, yeah, you're such a jolly guy. Well, I wasn't always a jolly guy.
So as a probation officer, you saw, let's say, a little bit of the darker side, and now you're focusing on the brighter side, it seems.
That's very true. That's very true. I'm an old guy now, and I'm enjoying life, and I'm very happy being Santa Claus, and I enjoy baseball. I don't like to get involved in political conversations, mm-hmm. and I say to people, let's talk baseball.
Right.
Or with you, let's talk Christmas.
And then you'll see what you work on next, whatever comes your way.
Well, I might do my book on probation. There was, in fact, it's East County Story. It was the greatest case I ever had, a man named Stuart Siegel. And he was involved with Barona Bingo back in the 80s. And he was just a famous con man. I mean, the guy did not spend one day of custody, and he had a rap sheet. I think it was 37 different states. He was an informant. And so he was always sliding by. I was a supervisor, so I was able to devote more time than a normal, a probation officer has a large caseload. Mm-hmm. And I made it my goal to get this guy, and I finally got him, and the FBI was hiding him out in the LAPD because he was a witness in the biggest homicide case before OJ in LA. He was a witness in that case. It was an LA cop that killed some people. It was called the Yom Kippur murders. Wow. Before that, it was called the Ninja murders. Mm-hmm. I tracked this guy down, finally found him, and he went to 5 years in prison. That's how I used to get my fun.
Okay.
And now it's being Santa. Yeah, I was not Santa that
time. Right. Wow. Well, you've had a fascinating story to tell us today. That's all we have time for. But thank you so much for joining us and telling us your stories.
Well, it's nice to be here. And Merry Christmas to everybody out there listening to us.
To check out Bill Swank's blog, please visit baseballsantaswank.wordpress.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County into Scanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.